Welcome to the Oldie Podcast. This is from our literary lunch featuring guest speakers and kindly sponsored by Noble Caledonia, specialists in worldwide small ship cruising. Our lunches are held monthly. Details and how to book can be found in our magazine and on the website www.theoldie.co.uk.
Our next speaker, Richard Gold, is so busy that I think we've only got one of three or four different incarnations of him here today. He began life very young as a very successful pop singer with Jimmy Sandel and the Communards. They had a number one hit with Don't Leave Me This Way. He became a very popular broadcaster until very recently on Saturday Live. For a decade, he was a vicar in Northamptonshire, and he's now become a very distinguished writer. He wrote a very moving memoir about the death of his partner, and then he has now begun a very successful career as a writer of ecclesiastical murder mysteries. One bestseller, Murder Before Evensong, came out in 2022. His latest is Murder at the Monastery. Ladies and gentlemen, the Reverend Richard Coles.
Thank you very much, Eric. Thank you, everybody. It's so nice to be here with a magazine that I read, a charity that I support, and a company that I work for. So that's very good. But thank you so much for your flattering introduction. It is indeed, and I thought if my CV landed on my desk, I'd assume it was the work of a fantasy. But it is actually true. Although there's been rather a lapse of time here between these various events, and this is brought home to me when, as you rightly say, in the 80s, I was the unlikeliest pop star of that decade in a band called the Communards, which was set up to bring down Margaret Thatcher with pop music. Where is she now? But to give you an idea about the passage of time, a couple of years ago, I was driving north. I was doing a church job. I was in a dog collar. I was on the M6. And I stopped at a service station for a cup of tea. I parked the car, and then, typically absent-minded, I stepped right into the path of an oncoming car, and the guy had sort of jam on the brakes, and he just missed me. And I looked through the window, and I sort of pantomime, go, I'm sorry, scarfed inside, got a cup of tea. And then I saw him coming, and he got a cup of tea too, and he looked around the cafe, and he saw me, and he came over. And I thought, well, I'm going to be in trouble now. So as he approached, I said, look, I'm really sorry, I wasn't paying attention, my fault entirely, I hope I didn't upset you too much. And he went, no, it's you. And I said, oh, yes. And he said, you created the soundtrack of my youth. And I said, oh, what a lovely thing to say, thank you. He said, some of the most memorable events of my life happened with your records playing. Lovely, thank you. He said, in fact, the woman who is now my wife, I met on a dance floor dancing to one of your records. I said, well, that's lovely, thank you. He said, I can't wait to get home and tell her I nearly ran over one of the pet shop boys. Close with no cigar. So the rest of the years have elapsed in an unusual career turn. After pop music, I found myself in ordained ministry in the Church of England. Now, I was thinking, what we just heard, actually, I think I, too, have been entrusted with women's history in a way, because I write about the Church of England a lot, and I fictionalise the life of a parish in the Church of England, and that is very much a story of women, as much as it certainly is of men, I think. And I write murder mysteries, too, and this is partly because, as an incumbent of the Church of England, I've often fantasised about murdering Christians. I mean to fictionalise it. The series is called the Canon Clement Mysteries, and our hero is Canon Daniel Clement, who's rector of Chanton St Mary, a little village in a shire county in the middle of England at the end of the 1980s. All is separate, all is familiar. Little village, grand estate, the grand family living in a grand house at one end. Daniel in the rectory with his feisty mother and his two dachshunds. Any resemblance to any person living or dead is entirely coincidental. And I think that's perhaps a typical scene. We'd recognise it for anyone who reads cosy crime, as the category is described today. But interestingly, if you go back to the late 1930s, there was a huge surge of interest in British crime fiction then too. And again, I suppose we would call it cosy crime. They present you with the same thing, this very cosy, settled, tranquil world. Something comes along, turns it all upside down, somebody comes along and fixes it. And I think perhaps one of the reasons why cosy crime has found such a wide readership now is for the same reason that it did in the 1930s. I think it speaks to anxieties we have about the state of the world, actually. I don't think you need to be particularly gloomy to look around the state of the world at the moment and feel a certain amount of anxiety. Perhaps Cozy Crime earths those anxieties in some way, restores the sense of a world put in good order. You need an agent for that, of course. When I was a boy, 8 years old, my grandfather took me to the Oundle Bookshop, a wonderful independent bookshop in Northamptonshire, still thriving today. And he bought me a book, my first proper book, The Complete Sherlock Holmes Short Stories. And I was utterly captivated by them. Captivated, I think, mostly by this enigmatic figure who lives on the edge of things, slightly ambivalent, and yet he has this extraordinary ability to look at the apparently innocent surface of something and divine through these tiny little variations in pattern the real story of what's going on. That, of course, is a skill which is essential in parish ministry. Indeed, it is a detective work. And I know this because, having been a vicar myself, I was constantly having to look at situations and people and try to figure out why they've done this bafflingly mysterious and sometimes injurious thing. My brother, in real life, was a detective, is retired now, and we would quite often swap notes about what disruptions you would see in the pattern that would tell you what you need to know. Interesting time, of course, the late 1980s, not only the greatest period in English popular music in the history of civilization. Also because when the TV adaptation comes, I think I can do well from the PRS for having my own records as the soundtrack. But really, I think because of social change. Lots of things happened in the 1980s. I think the world for many of us in 1980 changed so significantly, it was in some ways almost unrecognisable by 1990. And if you're trying to measure social change of that kind, well, you tend to look at cities, I suppose, London, Manchester, wherever it might be. But social change was happening everywhere, even Salisbury, I dare say, but certainly in villages and shire counties in England. So I wanted to write a little bit about that. And also, I was in prison ministry for quite a significant chunk of my time. I've now retired as a vicar. And one of the things, an inescapable truth that comes to you when you are working in prison ministry, is that very often the people who perpetrate terrible offences were themselves victims of terrible offences in childhoods of unimaginable deprivation, chaos and disorder. So that was interesting. And when it came to murder, I could have dealt with a number of murders too in ministry too. It sort of comes your way. Before I went to Findon, where I was vicar for 12 years in Northamptonshire, I was at St Paul's Knightsbridge in the gritty inner city parish of London SW1. The parking nightmare. And it was a very sort of, for those of you who know that church, it was lots of posh memorial services and posh weddings and lovely liturgy and all that. And I liked it very much. It suited me very much. And then when the job at Findon came up, I thought, well, that might do for me, much to the surprise of everybody else. I was due to go to the Grosvenor Chapel Mayfair, another pretty inner-city parish, but chose Findon instead. And I bumped into a friend of mine who's a glamorous priest at St Paul's Cathedral. And he said, oh, I hear you're going to the Grosvenor Chapel Mayfair. And I said, no. And he said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to St Mary the Virgin Findon in the Diocese of Peterborough. And he said, what did the bishop catch you doing? But it was a wonderful place to go, because although clergy moan about our jobs all the time, often parish priest comes out top in terms of job satisfaction. I love being a parish priest, I love being a vicar. Very typical Anglican parish, I was the Guardian reading vicar of a Daily Mail reading community, which is always an interesting thing. And the first thing that happened to my first week in sleepy little Findon was indeed a murder. And what was fascinating about that, as well as being appalling, obviously, was not just the brute fact of the murder itself, it was what had happened before that occurred, why that had occurred, what was happening in that community, in the lives of people that all of a sudden made a murder happen, and what did it do to people afterwards. So that's really what I'm interested in. And also, I think anyone who knows the life of the Church of England at all will be interested in the sort of social comedy that comes with that. And I think that's because when people come to church, often the gap between what they would wish you to think they are and what they actually are is most acute. We're all on our best behaviour, we all put on our Sunday best. But we are human beings, and human beings compete for the same sorts of things, and that creates tensions and tensions are always interesting. The first book began, actually, when I stood in my pulpit and announced to my expectant congregation that I had obtained funding to install a new lavatory for the benefit not only of parishioners, but also any disabled visitors. And I sort of rocked back on my heels, waiting for the warm acclaim that that would reach. And instead, it caused the worst row I think we ever had, because it would have involved moving a pew. But at first I didn't understand why that could possibly be a problem. What's wrong with moving a pew? That's my pew. Well, it's not your pew, technically. I've always sat there. Well, you haven't always sat there, have you? Yes, but it's my pew. Well, you can sit in the same pew, but just moving is not the same sort of thing. What's that about? Attachment. People attach to these things. It's not about the pews. It's about their place in the world and feeling that that's something which you're, you know, going to take from them. So you learn a bit about that. Actually, the most violent row I ever had in church was one Christmas. And we had two grand dames, one of whom was the mince pie queen. And she made our mince pies for the carol services. But there was a pretender who thought that the one bite mince pie was necessary, because there were so many carol services, a one bite mince pie created less debris. So she turned up for a carol service with a big tray of one bite mince pies to be met by the original mince pie lady with her tray of two bite mince pies. And as you can imagine, that's about 60 pages of fiction. We didn't have any murders per se, but I served in book three, Murder in the Monastery. My hero, Canon Chandler, in the course of uncovering the sort of, I should say that by book three, Chant of St. Mary has got a similar mortality rate to Midsummer, Nature of the Beast. And so this one, the death happens off-site. Daniel has taken himself off to a monastery, the monastery where he was once a novice, because he's uncovered in his personal life and troubling truths, which he wasn't really aware of before, related to that theme of social change. Available in all good bookshops, and some probably rather dodgy bookshops. I recommend it most heartily to you. What a pleasure to be with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Richard, and thanks so much to all three of our terrific speakers who will be signing their books just after lunch, just over there to my right. But before we go, I must announce the winner of the Noble Caledonia raffle, a very kindly given, extremely generous wine hamper, and the winner is local winner Sarah Flanagan from Salisbury. Oh. And that's your hamper just over here after lunch. So thank you all so much for coming today to the Only Lunch. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to The Oldie Podcast. Please share this episode. Look out for The Oldie Magazine subscription offer on our website www.theoldie.co.uk. Thank you and good luck.